Hey, what's up, what's up, what's up, what's up, what's up, what's up? It's People Pleaser with Austin Archer from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. We're doing that part at the beginning today. How about that? Something different. You weren't expecting that, weren't ready for that, but there it was. We're going to do a few things different today, because for the first time ever, we're going to listen to someone else's podcast on this podcast. You know that sometimes I'm a guest on other people's podcasts? I know I always have a weekly guest on my show, but sometimes I'm the guest on other podcasts because people like to talk to me, too. Go figure. I'm an interesting guy, if you didn't know. I know you're tuning in every week just to listen to which guests I'm talking about, and you wish that I would talk less, but guess what? I also have things to say, and this week we're listening to that. I was a guest on a couple podcasts recently. I was a guest on the Imperfect Strangers podcast. You remember Amanda and Melissa, who were my guests last week on the show. And we're not going to listen to that episode because you already listened to me talking to Amanda and Melissa. And I do think you should go and listen to the Imperfect Strangers podcast. And my episode with them is pretty fun. We talk about Weird Al Yankovic, and we talk about how Melissa doesn't want me to look her up on the real world, even though I did. I definitely looked that up, Melissa. I'm sorry. We talk about several things. We sort of get to know each other. We get into the nitty-gritty. It's a fun conversation. But this week on my show, this is going to be a rebroadcast of an interview I did with Nick and Brian over at the Plus Music podcast. They hit me up and they wanted to talk to me about music and the music things that I do and the musician lifestyle that I lead. And it was really fun, actually. It was great. It was fun to talk to those guys about sort of my history in music and sort of what I'm doing right now in music and the content creation game and TikTok and how I believe that TikTok is serving artists and musicians and people who have been trying to sort of carve out their own niche for years. You know, the new media model that's getting us away from everyone needing a record deal and with a major label, where you can kind of make it happen yourself these days. You know, the SoundCloud artist is almost a whole genre of music these days. We talk about all that stuff. It's a fun conversation. They're really great guys, and I was so happy that they wanted to have me on, and I think that the episode turned out great, so we're going to listen to that. It's the Plus Music podcast. You should go subscribe and rate them and listen to their show. It's a fantastic show, especially if you like conversations about music. And this is my episode with Nick and Brian. Please do enjoy it.
You're listening to the Plus Music podcast with Brian and Nick, where we're talking to artists about what it's like to get your music heard in the ever-changing music industry. How it is to use tools like social media and other platforms as an independent artist in a changing music business. Today we sit down with Los Angeles-based songwriter and TikTok genius Austin Archer. Austin talks to us about splitting his time between being an actor and being a musician, and how several TikTok viral videos in today's new media has finally given him a chance to become a self-supported entertainer. Here's more from Austin now. Welcome to the Plus Music Podcast. Today we're sitting down with Los Angeles-based artist and songwriter Austin Archer. Austin, welcome to the show. Here's a couple of things we've learned about you before we jump into an interview with you. We know you've been releasing albums for about 15 years as a solo artist. You just released your third full-length album, Beautiful Things, in October of 2020. Most recently, you've gained some notoriety on the internet and releasing short comedic songs on TikTok. That's how we found you. You've garnered millions of views with the likes of Turtleneck and Blazer, and released an album now called Now That's What I Call a Bunch of Austin Archer TikTok Songs Compiled into an Album, Volume 1. It's genius. It's classic. You've got a podcast of your own, The People Pleaser, with Austin Archer, and you've been acting for over 20 years. What haven't you done? Can't wait to hear more about your journey from then to now. Welcome to the show, Austin Archer.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for that nice intro. Thank you.
Great to have you. Great to have you. Yeah, so lots to talk about. We usually kind of want to start out at the beginning. How long have you been doing music then?
I started playing music when I was like 13, 14, 15 years old, in that range. And I did that thing that like teenagers do where you sit and like, and listen to a song over and over again and sit at your piano. If you got a piano and you're in the home you grew up in and like learn how, so I like would learn how to play Clocks by Coldplay or The Scientist or, Annie Waits by Ben Folds or like any songs that were like just chords, you know, or Let It Be by the Beatles. And you would just sit there and like, listen to that over and over and over again and acquainted with that. And then I had a friend who taught me how to a few guitar chords as well when I was like 15. I think I got a guitar for my birthday when I was 15 or for Christmas maybe. And started writing songs, and they were always really, really bad, of course, which is fine. And I think I was bad till probably like 21 or 22 years old. But like, it, you know, you got to just do that. I think some people are really good when they're teenagers and it blows my mind. You know, I've met a few who like really wrote good songs as teenagers. For sure. See them. Billie Eilish is like, you know, like you see these people come out like Declan McKenna is another one right now. That's like, he's been writing crazy good songs since he was 15, but I was really terrible for the first 5 or 6 years. And
yeah, there's always the freaks of nature. You know, they can just like jump in. They're just good somehow right away.
There's also that crossover wave too. Like you said, there you first start just kind of imitating people. You know, these are songs I like. I don't know what my voice sounds like. I remember I got way into the Cult when I first got into like making music, and the singer Ian Astor has such a like a real growl, and I remember singing like that forever because I have a really high pitched voice, which, you know, wasn't super popular in high school and bands and stuff. And until you can become confident, like, wow, Barry Gibb, there's Freddie Mercury. People have high pitched voices.
Oh, yeah.
I tend to kind of hot head, you know, as a kid. But yes, the people like the Billie Eilish and the Freaks of Nature, as Nick said, there is some talent that just can kind of bottle and pop out right at a young age. And
it drives me nuts whenever I see it. I'm always like, what are you doing,
dude?
You're not old enough to know how to write in that mature of a way and have such a clearly defined voice at this, like, no, but
it's unfair, damn.
It's an interesting time, and what's also interesting is that you can get your art out so much quicker now.
You really can.
A big audience if it's there, you know?
When I was in high school, it was when MySpace was first taking off. And you remember how people could put their music on MySpace? So yes. MySpace was like a really good spot for bands and stuff. And it was like this, it was like the beginning of that advent of like hometown, local musician. You can go to my MySpace right now and listen to these like 5 demo tracks that I did in my bedroom, you know, but like, that still was, and people, you know, I mean, like Owl City got popular doing that, putting songs on MySpace. And like, but now like the SoundCloud musician really is an established, it's almost like a genre now.
Mixtape, they call it, you know, it's like that idea of being able to put something out before it hits Spotify is interesting, you know, like where there's a whole different, it's like a testing ground, you know, and then they just rolled out the new payment strategy that they're going to have based on the followers that you have, not the plays that you get. Right.
Oh, so, on Spotify they did
on SoundCloud. Sorry.
On SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Spotify. No, Spotify is going to try not to do that for a long time. I think so many people that are on that platform, but there's, you know, not to get too deep into the weeds and business side stuff, but it's, you can see a couple companies trying to pave a way to get fans to want to participate on that.
All I see it
place versus another, you know,
I see it as just being a way to really grow the middle class of artists, like middle class of songwriters and stuff. It's something that traditionally hasn't really existed in the arts, where like if you're a storyteller, like a filmmaker, a musician, an actor, typically painter, painter, it's like you've either made it and you're making too much money or you're
struggling, mm-hmm. you know, and like there's, and the middle class was very, very small and sparse. Mm-hmm. There are people who've always traditionally been able to find a niche and be like a middle class artist. But I think that the internet and new media platforms and stuff like that are really creating a chance for us to have like a thriving middle class of songwriters and artists, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool.
Well, and you watch, like, I was part of like the old music business where you really kind of had to have access to radio, access to print media, and access to shelf space in these places that used to exist called record stores.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, but then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, started with MySpace, but developed into Facebook and Instagram. Now it's TikTok. But if you have a good social media, you don't necessarily need a huge media campaign. And mm-hmm. when's the last time you picked up a Rolling Stone magazine? Yeah, probably same time I did, you know.
Yeah, but. Yeah.
Awesome. So you have a background in acting too, right?
Yeah.
So do you think that is like, I'd like to hear more about that, but the quick question that I have is, do you feel like that plus your music, plus being a musician, plus having some kind of acting chops has helped you in social media?
In social media, for sure. It's like, it helps to make my content not so one-dimensional. And also, I mean, like, so I've had a lot of people say, like, if you just released the songs, you would go viral more often, or like, do people really like the songs? And I'm like, first of all, the songs are a lot more labor intensive than me doing like a skit or something. Mm-hmm. But what's been really nice about doing like the skits is like, I've had like directors who are directing TV pilots reach out to me and be like, I think you're really funny. Would you read for this show? There's people in the comments who are like, you're a good actor. And I'm like, yeah, that's not by accident. Like, that's actually
something I've been doing.
It's actually something I do, but like, it helps. Because in the content creation game, especially when you're trying to grow your audience, it really behooves one to post as often as possible. And mm-hmm. if you're trying to be a person who's making a niche as like writing comedic songs, mm-hmm. I mean, unless you're like super, super, super prolific and you can write, edit, produce a music video a day, every single day, I mean, I don't think you want to be doing that. I try to do like one a week and then the rest is like skits and stuff, but the acting really helps me to diversify my portfolio on mm-hmm. content wise.
Plus you can, it seems like you can test out tracks on social media, see how they work. You could even, you know, you can do 30 seconds of a track and just
totally
make that sound good and then see if mm-hmm. it works. And if people are like, fuck yeah, where is that song? Oh yeah, right. It's dumb. I'm gonna work on that.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. That's what the album that you mentioned now, that's what I call a bunch of Austin Archer's TikTok songs compiled into an album volume 1. Mm-hmm. There's like full versions of, because people always in the comments are like, full version. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm like, this is the song.
This is the version. Yeah.
But then I was like, all right, fine. I'll do a few like 3 minute long versions of these songs. And it was fun to like expand them out.
You could completely morph this into a variety hour, or at least a variety half hour, almost like a Dave Chappelle thing. You could do commentary, even your little acting and turtleneck and blazer, then go into the song.
You remember that show on HBO? It was
Kids in the Hall?
No, the New Zealand dudes.
Flight of the Conchords.
Flight of the Conchords was such a genius show. Mm-hmm. They had this really cool mix of music and like story, you know?
Well, and the thing about Jermaine and Brett is like, they are good musicians. Mm-hmm. They're not just like comedians who like, they're actually like people who, they probably have a library of songs that are actual songs that they actually like feel emotionally connected to, but totally. Where they found the success was with the comedic songs. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly what they play when they go play concerts and stuff like that. Tim Heidecker, you know, Tim Heidecker, he's a musician for Tim and Eric that like Adult Swim, but he's got this whole online universe of content and he's primarily known as a comedian and he does have comedic albums out, but he also like puts out serious albums of music that not a lot of people hear. But I went and listened to his last like serious record and I was like, this guy's a good musician.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
gotta kind of be frustrating. Yeah. I mean, it has, like, even the Monkees have an album that they put out, like when they were like, we don't want to be TV show people and teen idols anymore. And they have like the song Me and Magdalena. It's one of the most beautiful, well-written tunes I've ever heard. And when you see the monkeys in that logo in the credits, you're like, is it like, you mean the funny band? You know, I'm sure that dude probably is bummed. Yeah.
So let me ask, let me yeah. pose the question then, is just in general, mm-hmm. Where's the line between what makes you money being creative and what fills your soul as a creative person? And do they need to be together, you know?
Yeah.
Can they be exclusive?
I get this question a lot from people where they'll phrase it in a way where it's like, what are you primarily? Like, are you an mm-hmm. actor? Are you a writer? Like, what do you know? And I'm like, I never really know. It kind of changes on a year-to-year basis based on like what I'm doing mostly, but like that fluctuates. Traditionally, I've made the most money as an actor. Like that's the thing that I've been able to like have mm-hmm. as my job. The longest in my life, but only recently has music started to become a source of income. And right now music's actually like my main source of income because I'm writing a lot of jingles for different brands. And like, I'm doing a lot, like getting into that whole world of, you know, writing music for startups and small businesses, and then writing people's podcast themes and stuff like that. And like doing scoring for movies and TV shows and stuff like that. So like, this is all very new, but traditionally it was acting. Ideally, I would like to have lots of crossover in my life. I would like to be able to simultaneously enjoy my art forms and also be able to have a diversified income stream from mm-hmm. all of them.
So you know? Ideally, you'd love to be a Jared Leto that paints.
Well, I don't paint, so
okay, but, you know, why not throw another one in there? You got the acting, the music, and maybe
make some NFTs.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah,
but that's cool though, Austin. I think it's
smart.
I don't know. I think that being able to just be creative for a living is pretty rad, right?
I like it.
What how did you get into you were mentioning you doing a lot of jingle stuff and writing stuff for like bespoke things for people. How did that get started?
That's literally all TikTok. So like what happened in 2020, and it's not just me, I think everyone's aware of this, but like with live performance venues closing, and I'm a theater actor. I act on stage a lot. I usually do like two or three productions a year at different like equity houses. And that's like one of my sources of income. That's completely gone. Can't act on stage. So my only options are like doing commercial work or, you know, if I can, I shot a movie in 2020 and stuff, but like primarily what I was doing in 2020, I was furloughed from work and I was just making TikTok content. Mm-hmm. And I started making these songs, you know, like these like silly songs. And that became sort of like the main thing that people were resonating with. And it's actually like a really popular genre on TikTok mm-hmm. is people who make 30 to 60 second long comedic songs. And most of the people who are doing that are like dope musicians, are like actually really, really good. Mark Rebele, who's probably one of the most popular ones out there. Like the guy who's just, he's got that mustache and like, he always wears like silk robes and he's always like doing like these beat drops while talking about like having sex and stuff. And it's funny and silly, but like the guy's really talented and he's a really, really good musician. And anyway, I was doing that. And it all of a sudden just started like pouring in just mm-hmm. message after message after message of someone going, can you write a song for my company? You know? And so I very quickly had to realize what a reasonable rate was. And, mm-hmm. and I'm still figuring out how not to lowball myself and stuff.
Yeah. Is that something that y'all eventually want to get an agent to do, or they'll start slowing it down too much?
I think eventually, yeah. Especially because I'm not good at advocating for myself and I'm not good at negotiations. And so like, I'm realizing now I work for a small internet marketing agency that just started up between me and two other creators. And when we go to other creators to source them and go, hey, would you be into this? You know, like people who have a similar audience size to me are pitching me like three times what I pitch people rate wise. And I'm like, oh geez, are my rates too low?
Right. I'm
not, you know, and so I'm figuring out as I go, and we all are figuring out.
I think everybody lowballs themselves in some point in their life, you know, and you just figure it out. That's really cool though. I you know, we often talk about this, but it seems like the future of creatives is having that extra muscle of being able to be entertaining online, you know, like you gotta, whatever you do, you gotta be entertaining on whatever platform is sort of in vogue at the time. Right now it happens to be this video version of it, right? So you kind of have to have that muscle.
I've even gone as far as to tell some of my friends who are musicians who are really good, who just don't like the internet content game, who just like, it just, they can't get themselves to do it. I've gone as far as to be like, so the same way that you would invest in like your record, that you would like pay someone to make sure that your record's really good and invest in like PR and invest in, you know, distribution and all that stuff. Like maybe it would be smart of you to invest in like hiring someone to design your social media presence, you know, and going as far as just being like, I don't like doing it. This isn't in my wheelhouse. I just want to write the songs, and having someone else be the person who's in charge of making sure you've got a good video at least once a week, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. Let's dig in there. Cause there's a, I think that advice is important, right? Like I think a lot of people still believe this story that if you make something great, like they'll find you and sign you and do all the things that you imagined you could have done as a creative. And it's just not really how the world works, but it is possible to build your own following and have something to do. And then it sounds like you have like a pretty strong opinion about how it should be done. What do you think the right way to build a social media presence is right now today?
Oh, geez. I don't know about the one right way, because I see so many people employing different strategies, and there seem to be actually quite a few different things that work for different people. And it's almost like on a one, like individual basis of like, what's your personal aesthetic? I think something that I always say to people is like, get busy figuring out what your voice is, what you feel most comfortable doing. Doing stuff that you feel like when you watch it back, you like it, you think it like it works aesthetically for you. It's like, what's your personal brand thing? But when people say that so often, it feels so corporate, and that's like poison to artists. When you're like, what's your brand? They're like, I don't want to, I'm just a person who writes songs. And it's like, okay, but no, what it is like, what's your taste? What looks good to you? What sounds good to you? What filters do you like? What, you know, figuring out, just spending some time practicing at it and knowing that, you know, just like with everything else, with music, there are the Billie Eilishes and there's the people who are the wonder kinds who are just good at it right away. But for most of us, we have to practice and we have to figure out what works and what doesn't work for our voice, what works and doesn't work for our skill set. And I think it's the same thing with social media. It's like, this latest batch of videos from the last year of my life could look from the outside like I came from nowhere and I blew up, but I've been putting out internet content since 2015 that was getting no traction. And if you go back and look at my internet content from 2015, you can see why it's bad. And like, I had to practice bit by bit, figuring out trial and error, what works, what doesn't work. So part of it is just sort of like that investment of time, you know,
hours.
Yeah. This old idea of, and I have had this idea of like, if I make something good enough, it will be undeniable and people will see and they'll come to me. Yes and no. like we actually live in an era where that's more possible than it ever was before in history. We actually live in a time where like you really can make something that's so good that you suddenly have offers that you wouldn't have had before. But yeah. I think for most people to get to that place where you can consistently make really solid content that has a shot at getting noticed, it's probably going to take a considerable investment of time and work.
So, yeah, I totally agree with you. And if you're lucky to hit a platform early enough, you'll have enough time to get good at it while it's mm-hmm. still cool. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are they just jumping into the Instagram game now. It's kind of on its way out, you know, like they might be able to stay afloat, but TikTok just blew them out of the water as far as like the potential to succeed. And you know, now there's Twitch and then there'll probably be something else and mm-hmm. whatever else, you know, happens next, who knows, but might be VR. It might be just like a completely like you made your avatar and that's how you present yourself to the world or whatever it is, like the Ready Player One style of world, you know, where mm-hmm. nobody even knows what fucking anybody looks like
anymore. Well, and it could be bringing in, you know, I could even see it like, I mean, every time I turn on my cable television, I see a new network app, you know, for $5 a month, you can get Discovery. For $5 a month, you can get NBC. I could see a $5 a month and you get shows like Austin Archer's TikTok Variety Hour and thing like people who blow up on social. Because, A, I think that's the case for most people. Sure, there's always a creed. You know, a band that meets, plays 4 gigs, and then goes on to sell 20 million albums. Uh-huh. For the most part, bands have been touring, been in failed bands, just like you've been making content. I think that most of the people who are huge on TikTok now probably have at least a good amount of the experience that you're talking about that you need to have content that gets noticed. I could see it, you know, yes, it's either going to be another social platform or, you know, with smart TVs getting smarter to know what you like. I mean, why wouldn't there be a channel for, you know, people that are blowing up, influencers, people with viral videos?
There will be. Mm-hmm. It's so new media still is not getting recognized by mainstream Hollywood and the actual like titans of media the way that it really probably should be at this point. YouTube's been around since 2005 mm-hmm. and people have been making like a good living with a good audience consistently for 15 years, but it's still sort of thought of as this awkward little stepchild, other. This mm-hmm. weird, like, nah, you're other, but it's mm-hmm. like right now for the first time this year, the Screen Actors Guild is starting to offer mm-hmm. union contracts for online content.
That's insane.
So there's things happening where it's like, there will be a channel there will be a streaming service that is just new media content creators and stuff like that. And it will create an economy where there will be that same thing I was talking about earlier, where like, there will be the super successful people up at the top. But what I like about the things like Patreon and like you were talking about $5 a month, like that people can have, there's a new platform coming out called Perform Live that I'm really excited about that I think will mix the best parts of TikTok and all this stuff, but sort of do a Patreon model where your audience can come and watch you do a long live show. They can join you on stage. There's all this interactive featuring, but like there's all these paywall things, like you can pay to join on stage, you can pay to watch the stream, you can set different you can sell stuff on the live, you can sell your album. So I could be like doing a live show, playing music live, and I could have my albums for sale next to me in the live, and people can buy them while they're watching. You don't have to navigate, you know. So it's like, I'm excited about that platform.
Cool. What's it called?
It's called Perform Live.
Perform Live. Yeah, there was remember Quibi or Quip? I think it's called right. Quibi.
Yep.
Quibi. That was a giant fail, but there was something interesting in there, you know, which was
they were like, too ahead of their time. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the right mix. Like nobody really wanted to see what they were putting out, but so they didn't like, they did it the opposite, right? Where now in this world is they crowdsource success and then bring it up, where they were trying to start from the top and then bring it down. It just doesn't work as well.
My biggest problem with Quibi is that you could only watch it on your phone. I was like, I want to be able to watch this on my computer if I want. If I'm at home and I'm not out and
about.
I didn't
know that.
No, you could only watch it on your phone. And I was like, that's a big design flaw to me. Yeah, I honestly think it could have worked. I really think it could have worked if I could have watched it on my TV or watched
it. Yeah, totally. They could have put it on Apple TV and Amazon Fire Stick and then your computer, wherever you wanted, just like YouTube, you know, you can sit there and YouTube wherever you basically can be connected to the internet.
They just were too early and did it a little bit wrong.
Yeah. Kind of rushed it. Mm-hmm. Kind of rushed some of the specs of the design, but yeah.
Where are you? What do you got planning for the next 6 months or year of your we're coming out of?
Yeah, this has been crazy. Yeah, it's been crazy, you guys. So like I was working at a restaurant in Pasadena a year ago, and when the shutdown happened, it's called True Food Kitchen. Really, really good food.
Oh yeah, we have one down here.
Love True Food. I've been working there for like a couple of years, and when things shut down, I went on furlough and was doing the TikTok game. And I went back to True Food for like a couple weeks in November before we shut down again. And after those couple of weeks, I was like, I don't think I can go back. I really don't think I can go back to doing that. And this year has been like, boom, like I have a whole new career. I'm now, you know, the creative lead at this internet marketing agency that like we're running all these different campaigns and stuff. So like my year now is just 100% different in my life now from what it was a year ago. It's like, this is the first time in my life that I really feel like I'm actually doing the career that I've been trying to have for the last,
it's really cool,
almost 20 years. And so, yeah, this is, I mean, every year I have a big project that I'm trying to do. And then I have lots and lots and lots of little projects. The big project right now is I've got a movie that we're trying to get made called Marty Has Cancer. It's based on a play that I wrote, and we've got part of it already shot and we're just getting funding together. So that's like the big project. And then everything else is just content. And I've got a deluxe version of my album, Beautiful Things, coming out. That's going to be a double vinyl. Mm-hmm. It's going to have like 8 additional songs, and we're going to do like a limited double vinyl release. I think of like 100 of those, and we're going to sell them, you know, probably just for the big fans. But I'm really excited about that.
I got a question for you. So circling back to that movie you're putting together. Mm-hmm. What's it like? Comparison to the music business that you've been involved in, like, so you need to go find money, right?
Yeah,
basically, like you need to find a producer, an executive producer, somebody to bankroll it. What's the process like for you doing that?
It's more expensive. It's a lot more expensive, because to make a good album these days, and really do it right and really get everything done the way that you want to do it, you can do it for like $5,000 to $10,000. Mm-hmm. You can actually like do a lot of stuff just like with like buying good gear for your home setup, getting a good audio engineer, like procuring the services of like some good people to help you with the distribution and stuff. And like, you can do kind of all of it for like $5,000 to $10,000. You can't make a movie for $5,000 to $10,000. You can make a really, really cheap indie film for like $250,000.
Whoa.
And I've never ever raised that amount of money for anything in my life, but I'm working with a production company that has, and they know how to do it, and I'm just trusting them. And so I'm basically trying to keep my mind focused on all of the artistic aspects of the film, and making sure that that's all squared away on my end, that I feel good about the way that I think it's going to look and the way that it will read and stuff. But as far as raising the amount of, because they're actually trying to raise like several million dollars to make this movie. And I'm like, well, I have no idea how to do that. And if you guys say you do, then by all means, let's
go
for it.
It's gotta happen. I'm sure, you know, Netflix and has made it a lot easier to get movies greenlit too, from what I understand. Right. My brother's in the space too. Yeah. But are you going to direct it? Or are you guys trying to find it? What's like, what do you need? Cause I know in the music business, like most people in the old one was, you need to get a manager before you can get a label. You can't get a label and you can't get a manager. It's hard to get, like, it was like you had to play these
catch 22s
of all these catch 22s of like label, agent, manager, blah, blah, blah. And so you have to get one before the others start to come together. Is that how you've seen it in the movie space?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, funding will come first, because before we can start getting, you know, line producers and a director of photography and like all the things that we need, wardrobe department and who's going to be doing it. Like, before we can handle all that, we need to know that we've got money secured to pay everybody. So that's the first thing. What we did first is we put a little bit of money into a proof of concept, and we shot the first scene of the movie. So we shot, and the thing is written like a play. So it's broken into these like long dialogue heavy scenes. It's very like Richard Linklater, long scenes where people are just talking, and it's very actor centric and dialogue centric. But we shot the first about 12 minutes of the movie, and we're going to use that in a few different ways. If we can't use that just to get a package together where we can make the rest of it, we might go the route where we're going to use that as a short and enter that into festivals and see if anyone goes, we like this, is there more? And we go, there sure is. We just need money to make the rest. And so there's a few different options. As far as directing it, the idea right now is that I would direct, just because the entire movie has been already finished in my head for the last 4 to 5 years. And, but we're also totally open to, like, if we get a bigger package with more money and we can actually afford someone who maybe has like a little more clout or pull, which is a big deal in the movie industry, names and stuff like that, then I'll absolutely step aside and let some more well-known indie director take the reins. You know?
But you still want to act in it though.
Well, again, it's like, The small budget option is yes, I would love to act in it. And the big budget option is if we get some producers behind it that are like, we actually feel like we could sell this better if Paul Dano played your role. I'd be like, well, okay. Like, I'm not going to argue that I should be like, I'm not going to pull like a Sylvester Stallone, and maybe I should, you know that story of how Stallone wouldn't sell the rights to Rocky. He was like, no, I'm playing Rocky. And you know, he was right. Like, retrospect, like, hell of a decision. So maybe I should be a little bit more like, absolutely not, I'm in it and I'm directing it. But I would rather see the thing get made, and I would rather, but I would also always want to, whatever happens, I want to be very close to it, because it is, it's a very personal thing, to me, the project. It's, a lot of my art has sort of circled around this, what the movie's sort of about, over the last few years. And so, yeah.
That's cool, man. I hope it, comes it's together just, how you want it to. I really do.
Me too. thanks.
Yeah. So you got the movie coming out, you got records coming out, and then do you play live as a band, or?
Oh, geez, not enough. That's another one of those things where, like, I never played out live enough as a solo act to ever get like really reliably good. I'm sort of notorious for having like sort of sloppy live solo sets, because I just like, I don't do it often enough. And every time I do it, I wind up messing up or forgetting my own lyrics, or, and it's like very like Elliot Smith on heroin style, like, like, can't remember his own songs, can't remember, you know. And there was a time when I was in a band called Us Thieves, and we played like 4 or 5 times a month, and we got really good at playing live. And I think that's the key to playing live, is like, you just have to do it all the time. Just like anything else. But I do play live occasionally, and sometimes I go live, I play live music on my live streams on TikTok and stuff like that. But like, I would like to, especially now that the audience is building a little bit more. I have people all the time in my comments saying like, I would really like you to come to this town or this town when all of this is lifted. And so
that's really cool.
I would like to do like a tour with maybe my last album or something, or
I just was thinking as you were talking that it's crazy that you don't have to play live to still have a career, where it used to be a necessity.
Right.
You had to, that was how you made your money mostly. Right.
Right.
And now it's just not the same.
It's crazy. God, I grinded for so many years, and seven nights a week, man.
Yeah, man. Just got to do the gig so that you can break even and pay for gas and then hopefully have a little bit left over,
you know,
to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there's that platform that you mentioned. What else do you think is next for sort of entertainment, maybe music or?
I think more stuff like that. I think as new media grows and more creators and artists and musicians and storytellers are seeing the value and the benefit of growing their audience this way, there's going to be more and more efforts made to monetize it.
Mm-hmm.
And not that there already are lots of ways to monetize it, but it's going to just grow more because people are because like, again, the old model was, I need a record label to notice me. Mm-hmm. Or if you're an actor, I need the green light from one of the big studios. I need them to allow me to do my thing. In today's economy, you can really sort of make your own way and just sort of go, I'm just going to do this on my own. And you actually can do it. It's viable. Mm-hmm. But in order for that to be a thing that is something that we see happening more and more, people are just going to come up with more platforms that allow access to easy monetization. TikTok has all these ways that people can monetize their content, but it's all like kind of confusing and hard to see. It mm-hmm. almost feels like the platform doesn't want creators or audience to know that there's all these monetization tools. And the cool thing about Perform Live, that platform I was talking about, is it's like the whole thing is it's about getting these people paid. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I think you're going to see great. More platforms like
yeah. that. It's interesting that they chose the term new media. I don't remember new before a wave or a movement that where it actually worked, except new wave.
Yeah.
New Coke, new metal.
Well, yeah. There's always going to be new media, right? Like that's it's just always evolving. You see Twitch had done a really good job at that too for game players and all the other people that are doing other things on it now their monetization thing was pretty solid. I'm always surprised at the empires that people can build just playing video games.
It's insane.
For other people. Yeah. It's fascinating, you know?
What you find out, though, if you talk to those people, is it's just as much a full-time job as anything else.
Oh, yeah.
They're constantly doing engagement and constant. I mean, it's something they have to constantly monitor. They have to constantly be on top of, like, what they're doing. Where am I getting my money from today? Like, this idea of, like, oh, so you just sit there and play video games? It's like, no, like, they also have to be entertainers. Like, reason why people like watching them play video games is, and I've never watched a Twitch stream where someone plays video games, but like the reason these people have an audience is because they're funny and people like, and they enjoy the commentary and or they're really, really good. And people are like, damn, that move, you know, it's like, so.
Yeah, it's there's always something. It's nothing's that as easy as, just sit there and do that. And that's all you got to do.
Like, I just would love to be a fly on the wall when they get to tell their parents. Yeah, I'm making 40 grand a week, mom, streaming, playing the video games that you told me to stop. I mean, Dad, there was some satisfaction in signed a record deal. I'm making music. You told me not to, but the video games you told me to never play. I'm making way more than you and Dad ever made supporting me as a child growing up.
Oh, it's every artist's dream to finally have a day where you get to look at your parents and be like, so.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And then there's the OnlyFans success story.
Uh-huh.
Well, mom, okay, honey. You know, crazy
dude,
world.
I'm like, more power to like OnlyFans. I'm like, what a cool model for people who they've been doing it for free on Instagram.
Absolutely.
And, and like, you might as well get paid. Mm-hmm. And if people want to pay you, rock and roll. Like,
heck yeah.
Get it.
Yeah. And you want to see me in short shorts? Well, now you got to pay $24.95 a month for that.
Yeah. And people will.
Genius.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be an interesting world when we're all old and gray. I wonder what the world will look like. Maybe it won't be gray.
That far
maybe
away.
Maybe that maybe somebody will solve the old and the gray part of it too.
Maybe just the ocean will die and we won't make it there anyway. You know.
I know. I watched this documentary the other day. Called.
Did you watch Seaspiracy?
Yes.
Yeah. It's so depressing.
And it was like, God. It was, look. the content was great. Not the like most polished documentary, mm-hmm. but didn't need to be. The content was strong enough, and it brutal. Was like, I already don't eat a lot of seafood, but I was like, dude.
Oh, like, don't tell me it's going to make me not want to eat sushi and tuna fish.
Yeah. It makes you realize that of all the, like, of beef, chicken, seafood, seafood's actually like head and shoulders the worst.
And what's crazy is that it's just the what they do to the ocean. Like, it's not the fact that they're fishing, that like the nets that are like killing what, like what was really the most one of the most fascinating ideas that I got from that documentary, and we'll spoiler alert for everybody, but it's worth watching, is that it's the fishing nets and the stuff that the fisher people let go into the ocean. That's 50% of the debris.
Also just the issue of bycatch, that like they're throwing away 90% of what they pull up. They're pulling up these nets full of stuff, and then they're like, we're only after that fish. Everything else we're just going to chuck back in there. And it's like already dead. So they're just chucking like tons of dead fish and dead coral back into the ocean. And it's like, that doesn't happen with chicken and beef. They don't throw away 10 cows for every cow that they harvest meat from. But we, you know, in the ocean, we're just chucking it.
And it's like, it's, you know what it is, dude? It's this thing that human beings just don't seem to have this ability to think in the future at scale, you know? And like, they're trolling the bottom of the ocean and killing everything. It's like, you know, the fact that like most of the carbon that gets stored is getting stored in the ocean, and we're stirring it up, and it's not able to be, it's like amazing. Everybody needs to watch this documentary. It's glad you brought it up, because
it's crazy.
Everybody
it's
really should depressing. Watch it.
My brother said, I told my brother about it, and he goes, the whole species is in a battle between our spirit and our ego. And he's like, and our ego's winning. It's just winning. You know, that whole thing of not being able to see into the future. It's just because it's just what I want for my comfort. And I'm no better. I'm sitting there watching it going like, oh no, like everything I like sucks.
I guess we are not door dashing poke bowls tonight. What we were eating. That's a
just
bummer.
Watch it. You know, it's like, the thing is that everything can be, if everybody ate in moderation, and we actually, the problem isn't eating seafood. The problem is that we're not, that industry is so out of control. That's the problem. It's just doing whatever the fuck it wants. And, you know, man, anyways, Austin.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining.
This is
on that fishery note.
On that really happy note about how the planet's probably doomed. Thanks for having me on the show, you guys.
Absolutely. See you on the interwebs.
Yes. Hey, Austin, I wanted to ask you, though, too. What's a good song to play our audience out with? Get a good Austin Archer taste, if you will.
Have them listen to Sweet Rejection from my last album, Beautiful Things. I think I like that whole album, but I think that song turned out top to bottom the best. I think it's like the most marketable song on the album, Sweet Rejection.
Excellent. Can't wait.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Austin. Appreciate
it. Thanks for joining us. We'll do it again.
Thanks so much, guys.
Cheers, Austin.
See ya.
Call it bad luck. Call it self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess. Call it a shame. Call it good old-fashioned lack of talent. I could really not care less. Chris says it ain't happened, 'cause I'm not playing enough show. Whether he is right or not, I don't believe that anybody really knows. Oh, sweet rejection, you might be my oldest friend. How can one so well-acquainted still retain such thin skin? There goes another year, waiting for the tide to coming. You get old, thinking that the best is yet to come. You forget you're not in control when you're done. Could be from a street bullet from a fight five blocks away. You're dreaming about tomorrow, thinking what you should have done yesterday or no. Oh, sweet projection, my familiar little friend. Trying to imagine what my life would be if you weren't there. Here goes another year.
So that was fun, right? Hey, this is going to be really, really fun. Well, first of all, let me say, go subscribe to their podcast. Go listen to their show. They're good guys. The Plus Music Podcast. Someone just asked on TikTok here. I'm live on TikTok, of course. Someone just asked, what's their podcast called? And their podcast is called The Plus Music Podcast. P-L-U-S-M-U-S-I-C. Plus Music Podcast. Go check it out. Good show over there. Go give them some love and, you know, rate, subscribe, all those good things. Speaking of rating and subscribing, we are going to venture into the vault, the People Pleaser vault. We're now an old enough show that we can have terms like vault, I think. I don't know. In podcast terms, we're still a very young show, but I feel like we've been at it for a while. It's been, you know, well over a year. But we went back before the TikTok days, before the TikTok days existed, we did a segment on this show where people could rate and subscribe the show on Apple Podcasts, and I would read their reviews, rate and review the show. I would read their reviews and review them back on the air. Now, the rules were this. You have to first rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. That's the first rule. If I'm going to read the review, it's got to be a 5-star rating. None of this 4 stars, none of this 3 stars, 5 stars only. It's a 5-star review, and then you leave a review. I read it on the show, and I review you back. It works like this. So the first one I'm going to read is from Amanda M. Strong. And Amanda Strong, you'll remember, is one of the co-hosts of the Imperfect Strangers podcast. And it's a 5-star review because, of course, it has to be. And the review says this. Citizens of the world, this pod is for you. I listen to podcasts to hear new perspectives and to learn more about topics I'm interested in, and as a longtime fan of radio shows and podcasts that share personal stories, this podcast is the
is the perfect collection of all of those things. Host Austin is open, curious, and always willing to explore with his guests, and does so in a way that makes you wish he really was your pal. Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Before I review Amanda back, I'm going to read this other one from Beck's wife, which is Melissa Beck, who's the other co-host of the Imperfect Strangers podcast. 5 stars, and Melissa Beck says, big fan. Found Austin from TikTok and been fascinated and impressed by his ability to distill thoughtful and thought-provoking, and then this part's in parentheses, and on the right side of history, messages in tiny little bite-sized snippets. Had the pleasure of being a guest on his podcast to talk about podcasting, in parentheses again, so meta. Talented and worth your time. Okay. That was so nice. They really didn't need to do that. They went above and beyond. They really didn't need to go out of their way to go over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review my show. Now I'm going to have to go and rate and review their show back, because that absolutely is what needs to happen. But first, I'm going to rate and review them right here on the show, because that's how this segment works. You rate and review me, I rate and review you. They're fantastic. I really, really genuinely like Amanda and Melissa. It's interesting to me that they've never actually met each other in real life. I've never met either of them in real life, but I would genuinely enjoy a meetup with the three of us. I think we would have such a good time going to like Disneyland together, just the three of us, and or going to the movies together, going and seeing like a bad movie together, and then like laughing about it afterwards and sort of picking apart everything that we hate about it. Melissa and Amanda are good people. They're funny. They're good podcasters. Their podcast is solid. You know, they've developed and built a loyal fan base, and that's not an easy thing to do. And I respect the hell out of them. And I really, really appreciate this. And that's that segment. That's how that works. So you can go to Apple Podcasts if you're listening to the show right now, or if you're watching live on TikTok, rate this show 5 stars, leave me a review. I'll read your review on the air and review you back. Okay, that's the end of that segment. And now we're heading into my other favorite segment. It's the TikTok. I think I need stingers for all of these segments. I want to make musical stingers when I have an ounce of free time in my life, that for all of these different segments. So the TikTok, it'll be like, it's the TikTok. And talk is spelled T-A-L-K, just so you know. And maybe that'll be in the song. It'll be like, it's the TikTok, T-A-L-K. And then I want a segment for like the review. It'll be like, it's review for review. You write a review and you get a review. So just know that those are coming. Sweet Mama J will probably get a stinger. It'll be like, oh, hey, Sweet Mama J's here. And it'll be like, Sweet Mama J. But we're live on TikTok right now. I've lost like everyone that was here. We had, at one point, I think like 20 people, and now we're down to 10, and it's all right, 'cause it's just the real ones. But we'll keep this short, this segment. Obviously, I was just on the Plus Music podcast talking about music, and I'm wondering if anyone over here on the TikTok has anything they want to know about music or my experience with music, trying to market music, making music, putting together and releasing an album, the ups and downs, the woes, the high points, the I don't know, you know? It's Quell says, or asks, what was your inspiration for TNB, for Turtleneck and Blazer? I don't know if I've told this on the podcast before, but Mary and I were... I might have told this on the podcast, actually, but it doesn't hurt to say it again. Mary and I were leaving the house to go and have New Year's Eve dinner with our two friends that we kind of like see the most in quarantine. They're two friends that we sort of trade off dinners at their apartment, and they sometimes come over to ours. And we were going over to their place to have a small, quaint New Year's Eve dinner. And I got dressed, and I was wearing a turtleneck and blazer. And Mary came out of the bedroom wearing a turtleneck and blazer also. And I was like, before we leave, let's shoot some B-roll, because I have to document this, because I'm probably going to write a song about this and do something with this. I didn't know what I was going to do at the time, but that was it. It was that simple. And some of that footage that I shot that night is in the video. We shot again on another day and like did the parts where we're like mouthing the song and stuff. But the footage where she's wearing a green jacket and I'm wearing sort of a plum jacket and a gray turtleneck, that was all the original night. So that's the background to that. Real simple. Sometimes the best videos do come from really simple, quick spurts of inspiration. It's not something that you have to like sit and think about too long. It's just sort of there. It just sort of presents itself and it's easy. Here's a good song. Here's a good question from Spaghetti Bear. Again, love that screen name. How long does it usually take for you to create music? Depends on what I'm making. I would say that a song that's actually like personal to me, like a song that I would put on one of my actual, you know, kind of more heartfelt personal solo albums, would take longer than a song that I would make for TikTok. It takes longer to sort of try to craft a real emotional idea that I want people to relate to and feel. And the TikTok video, the TikTok songs kind of come really quick. They kind of, like someone will send me a video and I'll just have like a hook in my head right off the bat when I see the video. And I've gotten to the point where I can kind of put together one of those TikTok songs. And also they're short. They're like a minute long. And so I've gotten to the point where I can put together one of those TikTok songs in like a day. I can put together a TikTok song in like 4 to 6 hours. At least the beat side and everything like that. And then I send it off to Chrissy Bear, who mixes and masters my show and who mixes and masters all my music, and he puts final touches on it. And then, of course, I got to shoot the thing and edit the thing. So they do take they probably all said and done take like 10 to 12 hours to do with the video and everything. Sometimes longer. Sometimes it's more intensive. Sometimes I don't quite know what I want to do on the production end. But yeah, my own personal songs take a little bit longer because I want to like let them marinate a little longer. The funny thing is, the ironic thing is I might be onto something with the whole TikTok methodology, because the more that I'm just sort of having fun and goofing off and making it easy, the better they almost wind up turning out. And so I don't know, maybe I need to be easier and less precious with my personal songs as well. And I do have songs in my personal like library of songs that came out really easily and that just like were done in an afternoon that sometimes wind up being my favorite ones. Yeah, Joseph Taylor, 1971, said, "Love your comedy. Do you make serious music as well?" Absolutely. Yeah. Go to the link in my bio on any of my socials, click that button and click the Bandcamp button, or click Apple Music and Spotify. You'll see all my albums. Most of my albums are serious music. I only recently started writing songs comedically. For the vast majority of my songwriting life and career, I've been writing quote unquote serious music. I released an album called Beautiful Things in the fall of 2020. That is my most recent serious album of like real music. And before that I had an EP called You're Just Killing Your Poor Mother. And before that I had an album called Corey Feldman. And I've also released music with lots of different bands and things like that over the years. In fact, it's Bandcamp Friday this Friday, this upcoming Friday. If you're listening to this when the episode drops, or if you're watching this on TikTok right now, Bandcamp Friday is coming up. So it's a great time to buy music from indie musicians on Bandcamp. It's the day of the month when they give 100% of their proceeds to the artists. It's a great day to support indie artists. So if you want to buy one of my albums, do it this Friday. Bandcamp Friday coming up. Asked by Sarah Smart. Sarah Smart, what's up? When you were in high school, who were your go-to bands? Oh, geez. I was a big pop punk guy. I really liked pop punk music, so I liked Motion City Soundtrack and the Early November and the Rocket Summer. But I think my favorite pop punk outfit in high school was the Format. I loved the Format that was fronted by Nate Roos, who went on to be the frontman for Fun, and then he had... he put out a solo record that I liked a lot called The Grand Romantic. But Nate Roos hasn't done anything in like 4 or 5 years. I don't know where he went. Where'd you go, Nate? Did you just decide you didn't like it anymore and you stopped, that's fine. But I miss you, Nate. I miss you a lot. The format was my jam. I saw the format, I think, 4 times live when I was in high school because they kept coming to Salt Lake because we loved them. And they were from Tempe, Arizona. So it wasn't like a crazy journey for them to come up to Salt Lake. But the Salt Lake shows for the format were always crazy. I would get up and crowd surf and we'd get really sweaty and know all the lyrics to all the songs and sing along. So I really liked, like pop punk music, emotional music like that. Death Cab for Cutie, Snow Patrol, and then I have always had a soft spot for kind of emotional singer-songwritery types like Ben Folds and Elliot Smith and people like that, Nick Drake. One of my favorite bands when I was in high school and one of my favorite bands still to this day is The Killers. Love The Killers. This is good. Okay. So Samantha Hope Scholastica says, How has your lyric writing thought process evolved over the years? You know what's funny is I still employ certain tricks that I was employing early on. When I was working with Kevin Chamberlain and those guys and Sam Kite and the guys over at Kevin's channel on Mustache Respect, Kevin early on, because Kevin's a musical theater guy, and you know he's been in lots of Broadway shows and things like that. Kevin said that he hears in my music a lot of musical theater influence because of sort of the patter and the rhythm of my lyrics. And I was like, yeah, definitely. I absolutely come from a musical theater background. And so I've always sort of liked internal rhymes. And like early on, like one of my very earliest songs I wrote, there was this like internal rhyme scheme that I was like, that's going to be my thing, is sort of this flowing internal rhyme scheme. I think it said, the line that I'm thinking of said, it said, I will stay in my hazel-eyed maze alive. I can fly or see you, why do I, or oh, why do I? So it was, let me say that again. I will stay in my hazel-eyed maze alive. So hazel-eyed, talking about a person's eyes that I'm thinking of, like it was a love song. I will stay in my hazel-eyed maze alive. I can fly or see you eye to eye, going back to the eyes. Oh, why do I persist? Why do I insist? And did I mention I have missed you? So it's sort of this thing of like all of these internal rhymes, rhyming eye to eye with why do I, but doing them right after each other. Hazel-eyed maze alive, eye to eye, oh, why do I? Things like that. And then I do it, it's still in my songwriting. So you can hear it in Mustache Respect. I say, chilling on a boat, rocking Tommy Bahama, me and my homies, yeah, you know me, yo. So me and my homies, yeah, you know me, yo, word to your mama. So the end rhyme is Bahama with mama, Tommy Bahama and mama. But internally in that lyric, there's a little internal rhyme. I've always liked stuff like that. And I think I get that from like listening to Stephen Sondheim and listening to musical theater writers. Musical theater writers like doing things like that. They like doing all kinds of clever little internal wordplay rhyme schemes. And so that's sort of structurally how I think about it. I think I used to be, when I was starting out, a much more metaphorical writer, as you heard from that lyric that I was just talking about from one of my early songs, like a hazel-eyed maze. I wrote a lot of poetry when I was in high school, and I was very into like metaphor and not really being very clear with what I was saying. There was a whole phase of songwriting when I was smoking a lot of pot, and I didn't really know what I was talking about when I wrote lyrics. I just sort of like wrote sounds that sounded cool together, and I didn't ever really know what I was talking about. And I think I evolved into more of a Ben Folds place where I'm a little bit more literal now with my lyrics. I'm a little bit more just direct, and I just sort of say what I'm talking about. I don't really try to like hide it in a metaphor. I literally just like state the story of what it is that I'm talking about really directly. And I kind of like that a little bit more. I think it's more accessible for the listener. Those are actually the songs that I enjoy when I can just like listen to the lyric and know what they're talking about. I was making fun of country music earlier, but country music does this really well. Just like tells a story and doesn't really try to disguise what the song's about. You just know what they're talking about. So that's sort of that. Let's call it there for the podcast. Stay on the live. We'll keep hanging out. But I'm going to call it there for the podcast. That's enough questions and comments for that. I think we got through it. And also you're going to hear it more in the interview that I did with Plus Music. But thank you for the questions and comments here for the podcast. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music, also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, Bandcamp Friday coming up, looking up Austin Archer wherever you stream music. My music is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. This show is also mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go to themarmalademusic.com, tell Chris that I sent you, get 20% off your first audio project. Go do that. Our show, the TikTok portion of our show, is moderated by Sweet Mama J. We love you so much, Sweet Mama J. Thank you so much for all you do. And that's it. We'll see you next week with a really, really cool guest that I'm really excited for, but I'm not going to tell you who, but it's a very, very, I mean, it's like a, this person's a big deal. I'm going to say this. My guest next week is a Emmy and Golden Globe Award nominee. So, yeah. Okay? We'll see you next week. Love you so much. Bye-bye.